Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Bill Mock, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Sometime back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who live within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here, too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
I think everyone is interested in family history. I am meeting Bill Mock right now at the Bedford County Historical Society. Bill is on the board here, and I am a member, and this is quite a place. But today we're not here to talk about the Historical Society specifically, but rather to Bill. Bill Mock is a bit of a fixture here in Bedford County. He's been here for, I think, 280 years himself. I think he told me that. And he is a very interesting fellow. He's had a very varied career. He is a leading member of the Vietnam Veterans Organization here in Bedford County. And he has written a book. And we're going to talk about his book shortly. But first of all, Bill, I want to welcome you to the Bedford County Speaks. Thanks a million for taking the time to talk to us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You are a native of Bedford County going way back. You said your family's been here since the 18th century.
Actually, that's true. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of a concoction between the Mock, Walker, Beisel, and Harbaugh families. And each of those are bicentennial families. The direct lineage in terms of the Mock family goes back to Peter Mock, 1742.
Did he live here in Bedford County?
Or yes, he did, right around the Reynoldsdale area.
So you really have very deep roots here. Well, it's great to meet someone like you. And tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you go to school as a kid?
Right after I graduated from high school, October, I enlisted in the military.
So where did you go to high school?
I graduated from Richland High School.
Richland. So that's in Cambria County.
That's in Cambria County.
Forgive me for my unfamiliarity with this mountain you're talking about, but what mountain are we talking about here?
The Allegheny Mountains.
Okay, you're right. So one side is Cambria County, and the other side, of course, is Bedford. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. And, of course, at one time, Cambria County was part of Bedford County.
So you enlisted in the Air Force right out of high school.
That's correct.
How old were you when you went in?
18.
How long did you serve?
4 years.
Now, I know you went to Vietnam. Did you serve other places beside that?
Truthfully, my permanent change of station was Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. And I was there for close to 2 years working on a surgical ward. And I suppose I did an okay job. They put me in charge of a surgical clinic. And I thought that I would spend the rest of my time there until along came what was called the Tet Offensive. And that occurred the end of January, beginning of February 1968.
Right.
And shortly thereafter, we were taking so many casualties over in Vietnam that they needed augmentation groups.
And you were a medic.
And so. I was a medic, that's correct. And so in the twinkling of an eye, after completing physiological training, I was on my way over to Vietnam.
How many tours did you have there?
Just one.
Yeah. First of all, welcome home, and thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Very much. Okay, so you got interested in the subject of this book. How? How did you get interested in this whole business of the Underground Railroad?
Well, as they say, the story goes back to probably over six decades ago when I was a little boy. And It was quite common there at the farm on the front porch of the cabin, especially in the evenings, for stories to be told. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories I heard was about the Underground Railroad.
Who told the stories?
Usually my grandpap and my mom and dad.
Oh, so you lived with your grandparents?
Well, my grandpap was there. He was there for a while, and he moved down to Pleasantville. But he would come up every so often. And as I had mentioned in my book, even as a young individual, I thought, come on, I was familiar with the farm to know enough that there was no such thing as an Underground Railroad. Of course, at that point in time, I didn't understand what the Underground Railroad was. From that point on, as I got older, I began to do some research, because the story itself was so intriguing, and I had come to the Bedford County Historical Society, and I actually found in the 1884 history of Bedford, Somerset, and Fulton counties, an entry where my great-great-grandfather, Benjamin H. Walker, was listed as a leading Underground Railroad participant. And that led me to my next step, which was locating the obituary, and that gave me even more meaningful information. And from that point in time, the chase was on.
Boy. Mm-hmm. So you got interested in this because of your great-great-grandfather. Great-great, maybe three greats, whatever it is, a grandfather. And his name is Walker, Benjamin Walker.
That's correct.
So I know that in some of the books I've written about the subject, they called them conductors of the Underground Railroad, which, of course, there was no real train, but there was the whole idea of bringing slaves in underground. So what kind of activity occurred around here? I didn't think there were that many slaves fleeing through Bedford. Bedford seems kind of an odd spot on the map to where they would be coming through.
And it's because of that. It's almost like the road or the path less chosen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a well-known fact and well-documented that Quakers out east assisted with the Underground Railroad.
Right.
That the Quakers in this area, their assistance is not so well-known. And once I had started this research, which I've been doing close to 35 years, even before I started piecing the book together, basically, there were two paths, one coming up through Cheneyville area, up through Rainsburg, through Mount Dallas, and up into Morrison's Cove. And eventually, they would go up to Haldaysburg and Altoona. There were a couple homes along the way. I believe the Keggy Farm was in the Morrison's Cove area. I believe the Stuckey Farm was at the lower end of Snake Spring Township. That was the one route. Another route came up through Cumberland Valley. You have Wills Mountain on the left-hand side coming up through Bedford County and Evitts Mountain on the right-hand side. And even though the attention is given to Cumberland Valley, the fugitives would have, just like we would have in the military, skirted the sides of the mountain, the high ground. And this would have brought them up into the Bedford area, Borough of Bedford. And from that point, there were some conductors in that area. And they channeled the fugitives along what was called, in this area, I found out through research, especially trying to gather information, the old Johnstown Road. When I'm on the other side of the mountain and I talked about the old Johnstown Road, they had no idea what it was because it was called the Bedford Pike.
Huh.
However, if you go back to the beginning, that particular road or trail started out as an Indian path and was commonly called the Conemaugh Path.
I see.
Mm-hmm. That particular path went right through our farm. And in my research, and I was going to mention this in my presentation Saturday too, I would argue there was a third route, depending on which side of Wills Mountain you came up on. If you came up on the west side, that would have taken you at the Man's Choice and Shellsburg. And there was actually a black community that is documented that was in that particular area.
It was called,
it would be southwest of Shellsburg, and it was called Black Hollow.
Really?
Oh. And supposedly in about 1818, a smallpox outbreak wiped out, unfortunately, all of those folks. A few remaining moved into Napier Township.
Right.
So the reason why I'm interested so much in what I call Quaker Corner is because it appears, based on research, most of the activity occurred in that particular area, which would be the northwestern part of Bedford County.
From your research, were you able to determine how many Quakers actually lived around here? I mean, it probably wasn't a lot, was it?
From some of the older individuals that I had talked to, and I have to give credit to them, Mr. Fred Ickes in Fishertown, and J. Robert Miller in Fishertown, along with the history of Bedford County, even my great-great-grandfather was documented to have assisted fully 500. Mm-hmm. That's quite a few slaves just in one particular area. The 1906 history of Bedford and Somerset County actually qualifies the answer to your question. It specifically names a number of individuals that lived in that area that were involved in some fashion with that Underground Railroad. What I did in my book was I highlighted the primary characters as well as the supportive cast that assisted them.
Right. Well, what is interesting to me is the predominant population around here is of Scot-Irish background. Pacifists, Quakers, were mostly English, at least the ones in the East. So I'm assuming that they came here the same way. So they were a bit of a minority, and pacifists were something that were not understood anywhere back then, you know. And so they're the ones who really started the whole Underground Railroad movement because of their pacifist views. So I guess my question is, what brought them here? Why would they come here, of all places?
See, that was one of the one of my questions. Why they came here? Why did they specifically settle in northwestern Bedford County? Yeah. Why? And after 30-some years of research, I have to come to the same conclusion as J. Robert Miller. The actual, if there is such a thing as one reason, is just simply lost because we have no idea. Other than the fact that possibly they just wanted to be together in an area where they could farm and live and carry out and the biological.
Or it could be the concept of which I refer to retirement homes, is that one person moves in, then calls all their friends and tells them to come.
Well, so that could very well be.
Maybe it's the same thing here. Maybe it's not complicated at all.
But I did want to tell you something here in reference to the Quakers being pacifists.
Right.
And I have to interject this on behalf of my ancestor.
Okay.
The idea of being a pacifist can be misleading at times because not all Quakers were pacifists. When it came to two major principles, and that is the violation of God's laws and a principle of freedom, the individual liberty, they could provide some stern resistance in a variety of ways. In addition to that, my third great-grandfather had a half a dozen or so grandsons in the Union Army. And so this idea, as I said, with the pacifists can be misleading at times.
Well, I know as a native Philadelphian, there's a famous person that's known in Philadelphia. His name was John Pemberton, and they called him the Fighting Quaker because he had participated in the American Revolution. So I've heard that before. It's selective, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the Quakers today are quite different from what they were back then. Our guest is Bill Mock. He has written, I completely forgot to ask, what is the name of your book?
Oh, the name of the book is The Last Station, Underground Railroad of Quaker Corner.
Last Station. Well, we're going to hear all about The Last Station, and we're going to hear about his book and everything he did to put this together. And when we continue with Bill Mock right here on Bedford County Speaks, when the program continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, general manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our seven ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our 7 Ways to Save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Raymond Horner of the Bedford County Vietnam Veterans Association, and you are listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
Well, our discussion certainly has been interesting. It's talking about something that I'm very acquainted with, Quakers, and when I moved to Bedford County, I never thought I'd hear about it again. Of course, until I bump into Bill Mock and tells me that the Quaker heritage here is quite profound.
In the state of Pennsylvania, through the 1700s, there was quite a few slaves within the state. And because of the Society of Friends, thought to be one of the most important groups that pushed for this abolition of slavery, you had a number of laws by the state as well as the federal government come around. Like in 1780, the Gradual Emancipation Law in Pennsylvania. And of course, the southern states that had was really pushing slavery. It was sort of like a pushback type thing.
Now, excuse me. And it was called the Gradual Emancipation. I never heard that before.
Yes.
Interesting.
What it meant was that, and of course, there was some blacks living, free blacks living in Pennsylvania at the time also, that if you had a son or a daughter, your offspring was literally a slave or a servant for 28 years. At the end of 28 years, then they gained their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as I said, that kind of irritated some of the folks in the South. And so there was pushback on it, and they came back and tried to have the federal government pass some laws, and in turn, Pennsylvania passed personal liberty laws, which infuriated the people in the South again. And I'm not sure if it was intentional or unintentional, but we ended up with the Fugitive Slave Law of 1850, which really kindled the fire, because based on that, the federal government said that the local constable or sheriff had to actually assist the slave catchers in trying to locate these fugitives and return them back to the owner.
So made it official.
That's right. And when that happened, all that did was increase the number of people that were anti-slavery.
So that's very interesting. So the real interest, I should say, the real growth of the underground movement came as a direct result of a law saying they couldn't do it, which is human nature. The minute you tell somebody you can't do something, off you go, right?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. So what happened then? We have written 1850, only 12 or so years prior to the Civil War. Slavery, of course, is going full tilt in the South. Slaves are escaping to the North, and they're on their way to Canada. You said some stayed here.
Some stayed here. The reason why is because they tried to intermingle with some of the folks already living here, sort of getting lost in the crowd type thing. And I need to tell you something else also. I remember when I first started this research for the first Pennsylvania historical marker in Bedford County for the Underground Railroad, there was a lady, and I just think the world of her. Her name was Karen James. She was the statewide coordinator for the state of Pennsylvania, for PHMC. And she made a statement that I thought was profound. And my book is constructed around this. And she said, too many times people refer to Underground Railroad areas as stations. It's always one station, another station. She said, in truth, the Underground Railroad was a network of people, not so much stations, people. And it wasn't just the Quakers. You had other denominations, people assisting with this. And my whole approach to this is the idea that the people that participated in this had to answer to a higher power.
Sure.
This business of security and keeping a secret, in my opinion, goes far beyond any of the social media we have today.
Right.
And this higher power, of course, the Quakers refer to as the inner light, which I commonly refer to as the Holy Spirit.
Right.
So you have that, in effect, guiding individuals. By the way, that includes the fugitives themselves. They had to take the initiative to escape. And so you can't come out and say that one group was assisting with the Underground Railroad. You might have maybe 50 people at a meeting house and only five actually involved with it. Now, it's not that the other ones didn't know about it. It's just that they didn't actively participate. So, and it's the same thing with other denominations.
But people involved in this were placing themselves in danger somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. You could be put in jail, you could be fined, and you quite possibly could lose your life.
By the people chasing the slaves or
absolutely.
The constable you mentioned? Or
absolutely.
All the above?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is a known case that if you come back on Saturday that I will specifically talk about that actually interrelates Cambria County with Bedford County. Well, as I had previously discussed, supposedly back in 1837, there were two fugitives that escaped from Virginia, oddly enough, on Abraham Lincoln's birthday. And they came up through Bedford County, and I know where they ended up, which I'm going to tell you here in a minute. So based on that, I'm going to say that I would think they would have come up through Cumberland Valley, either skirted Everett's Mountain or Wills Mountain, came up into Bedford, and they ended up going out the old Johnstown Road, and they were at St. Clairsville on their way north up towards Hollidaysburg and Altoona when slave catchers caught up with them, and there was an altercation, and both fugitives were wounded. They were shot and wounded. They came back down to the Johnstown Road and continued on their way, being chased by dogs and the slave catchers, while being wounded, made their way over to Johnstown, to the William Sleek Farm. Sometimes it's called Sleek, S-L-E-E-K, sometimes S-L-I-C-K.
Ah, so that's where the word came from. Interesting.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. And from long story short, from that point onward, they had to go through a number of legal issues, and people in the area wanted to return the fugitives to the owners. Supposedly, during the situation, the slaves escaped, and nothing was ever heard of them ever again. The point I wanted to make is that I think back, as I said, in 1837, that's 180 years ago, they would have passed on the old Johnstown Road, approximately 150 yards from the log cabin that I live in today.
So these fugitives progressed their way through each of these stations, or as Karen said, the station by real people.
Mm-hmm.
And was their ultimate objective to get out of the country, to get to Canada?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's also, as Paul Harvey says, page two, or the rest of the story, which I have a part of the rest of my story in the book, and which I think you might be interested in finding out.
Okay, well, good. He's good, boy. He leads you right to the book. He's not going to let us have anything here. Okay. Our guest is Bill Mock. He is the author of a new book called The Last Station, but there's more to it. What's the rest of the title, The Last Station?
The Last Station, Underground Railroad of Quaker Corner.
Quaker Corner. Mm-hmm. And where is Quaker Corner?
Quaker Corner would primarily, the perimeter of it would be St. Clair Township in 1794.
I see.
Now, after that point in time, the township would have been subdivided up into other townships. But at that time, 1794, that's what I identify as Quaker Corner.
Are there any Quakers remaining in Bedford County today?
Absolutely.
No? Is there a Quaker meeting up there?
Yes, sir. There sure is in the Fishertown area.
Is it active?
Yes, it is.
Well,
they're wonderful people.
Yeah.
And I, at times, when I get an opportunity, I go down and I attend.
Hmm.
And they are just the nicest people you'd ever want to meet.
That's something. Well, that's and one of the things I told Bill before we started the program today, as I said, one of my roles is to get the local residents, you listening, to maybe learn about something that's right under your nose you didn't know. And I would guess, Bill, not a lot of people knew they had a Quaker meeting here.
Well, I will tell you one other thing, that they welcome everyone.
Yeah.
And for those people that have never had that experience to go to a Quaker meeting, I would recommend that you go. And it is just absolutely meaningful. Mm. Yeah.
It is indeed. Well, I mentioned our guest is Bill Mauch, and he has this book, and we're moving into what I call our shameful promotion portion of the of the program. So let's talk a bit about the book. First of all, how long is it? How long is your book?
You mean in pages?
Uh-huh.
281 pages.
Okay, so it's a sizable book.
Mm-hmm.
And where can I get it?
You can get it right here at the Bedford County Historical Society, or it is produced by Clausen Press, mm-hmm. Clausson, okay. press.com.
Right.
And it sells for $34 plus tax.
Can I buy it online?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. If you go to that ClaussenPress.com, it's on the first webpage.
And I would hope to assume that the book will eventually be available in the Bedford County Library.
Oh, I would think so. I would hope so.
Well, you'll see to it, I'm sure.
And then I was going to say, because I also have orders in that the book can be purchased from myself, too, and
right.
I've distributed already at a few other places.
So this is your first book?
This is my first book. And it has become so important to me, and I'll tell you why. I'm not quite sure whether to say that I latched on to this subject or the subject from my ancestors at the farm latched on to me, but I can't shake this. Mm-hmm. And even spending the 30-some years on the chase looking for more information, I continue to do so. It's so important to give credit to these people that were involved, both the fugitives as well as the people that assisted right. them. And it's like I said, it's difficult for me to put into words, but I can, living there at the farm by myself, I have sensed many times, it's almost like feeling without touching something, right. that this is very important. And it's not so much as I have to do this as much as it is I need to do this for a responsibility to those people. And I will go back to one thing that my dad said in the last couple of years he was alive, and coming from my father, this was a compliment. He told me, he said, Mr. William, he always called me that when he wanted to drive home an important point. He said, you know more about the farm and the ancestors than anyone I've ever known. And for my dad to say that, because you see, in my opinion, he was the one
right.
that knew. And but he hit me right between the eyes yeah. when he said, so what are you going to do about it? And I looked at him. This is when I was, you know, I thought, what are you talking about? He said, what are you going to do about it? He said, because when you pass away, everything you learned will be lost. And so he put the responsibility on me. And I hate when parents do that.
Well, you were obviously giving your orders and didn't realize
yeah,
it.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful story. You know, it is, and it's wonderful you did this, because I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of great ideas like this die with the author, because they'll say, well, someday I'm going to write a book about it. Doesn't happen. Things are lost. I mean, we're here in the repository as we record this program today in the Historical Society here out on Route 30. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of history. I want to thank you very much for making the contribution on this radio show today. You've done a wonderful job.
Well, I thank you very much for the invitation.
We're going to say goodbye to Bill in just a second, but first I want to remind you the program today is brought to you in part by the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce, who proudly supports and celebrates the business community of Bedford County. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. Bill Mauch, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today, and I wish you all the success in the world with your book. I hope it ends up in the Library of Congress next week, because it is a great contribution to this area, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.